We're doing the Chazon Ish, Emuna u'Bitachon. We're up to page Chaf Gimel, the ninth paragraph. Umanim netzuim reYosef divrot kodesho shel Agris, zechrono livracha lechaye olam haba. How beautiful, how accurate, how precise are those words, the holy words of the Gris. I don't know if that's Rav Yosef Soloveitchik. I'm not sure who the Gris is, who that stands for. Beigoto bazeh, and his letter with regards to this. V'chot v'rav zal sham. This is what he wrote there. אם אמנם ביסורי טריפות בשר בחלב שלטו עליו הרגליו ומגרמי הוא נרתע עליהם. If with regards to the prohibited foods, meat with milk, non-kosher meat, so there a person's habits take control of him and he naturally he stays away from them. He reels from them. So guys, you'll get there. You'll get used to eating kosher and you'll see that you reach a point where you're not, it's not second nature to walk into a non-kosher restaurant, but it's second nature to take a step back. So, the any tzomet yaber alaf, and the regular person who's from birth, so he doesn't find his desires overwhelming him to go and eat non-kosher food. And again, Bezrat Hashem, you'll get there. But even a person who's on that level where the non-kosher food isn't a challenge for him, nonetheless, with regards to mitzvos between man and his fellow man, b'chalakot ya'avor, a person finds himself so smoothly transgressing, v'libo lo yifchad, and his heart doesn't tremble, ve'af k'shechaveru tovo ledin. And even when his friend comes and sues him and says, hey, wait a second, this isn't right. You owe me. Yachbol tachbulot lihitchamek v'lishtamet mimenu. Suddenly this God-fearing person who would never consider eating something non-kosher, but he has no problem cheating his friend, cheating on his taxes, cheating the government, cheating his school. He has no problem. And when he's sued, he suddenly finds all kinds of excuses and ways out. So the Gris writes, he says, you know, the prohibition of stealing in certain ways is more severe than the prohibition of eating non-kosher. If a person ate non-kosher and he does tshuva, then Yom Kippur will bring him forgiveness. Not so if he stole from his fellow man. Yom Kippur doesn't atone. And people say, I didn't steal. Well, he says, remember, if you have something that's legally not yours, that's called stealing. Now we have all kinds of excuses. He says, it's pretty simple. If you don't have a right to this and it's in your possession, that's called stealing. Nonetheless, because we're not in this habit of being so careful to watch the halacha in regards to between man and his fellow man, nafsho ne'ederet mekinyana miknat ahavat hamishpat ufachdato. One's soul ne'ederet mekinyana miknat ahavat hamishpat ufachdato. Somehow, his soul doesn't exactly find a way to acquire this affinity for justice. Somehow one's soul doesn't exactly find itself loving truth and honesty and fairness, nor does one find himself fearful of sinning in this realm. A person isn't in the habit of thinking this way. You could get into that habit. We're in the habit of thinking, I can't eat this, it's not kosher. Are we in the habit of thinking, I can't accept this change, it's not mine? Are we in the habit of saying, no, wait a second, that's prohibited. That's not kosher. The money is not kosher. When it comes to money, somehow we're not in that habit, and our soul doesn't find it easy to enter that habit. V'dvarav zal, and he writes of blessed memory, even people who have a good reputation because they've done so many good things in their lives, and people call them God-fearing people, But when it comes to this, their friend sues them, their friend has a claim against them, suddenly they find excuses and walk away. Wait a second, what are you walking away for? If non-kosher money were as serious as non-kosher food, and it is halachically, then we shouldn't run away from verifying is the money I have kosher or non-kosher. V'ha'ikal shebirfuat tachalu'ei ha'nefesh ha'elu. And the prime thing, if a person wants to cure himself of this spiritual illness, if a person wants to actually be honest, so he comes back to the idea he said in the previous chapter, in the previous paragraph, if you look real close and understand the halacha and its details, that's how a person can develop an affinity for those mitzvot. And again, he says it's not second nature. Second nature is that a person feels like, no, so I took something that's not mine. So what? We said in the previous paragraph that if you want to love a certain halacha, learn its details. So he says you want to love the halachot of honesty, learn the details of the laws of honesty. If you learn the details of how to be honest, you learn the details of the laws of what money you're allowed to take and not allowed to take, that's how you come to loving the idea of being an honest person. Now here we see a scary thing. A person can sometimes work in a general way to be a God-fearing person. But that's vayikar chaser b'nafsho. But he's still going to miss a very central point. Im lo lamad v'lo amal b'yun halacha b'choshen mishpat. If a person is not going to work at learning the halachot of being an honest person, so he could walk around thinking, I'm a God-fearing person, but what happens when he boards a bus? Let's take a simple example. He boards a bus, and his kartis ma'avar, his transfer, expired by 3 minutes. So now he has all kinds of reasonings where he can say, well, it's almost on time, and this bus could have just as well come 3 minutes earlier. Or let's take another example you guys haven't yet encountered. You're checking out at a store, and you could use another few bags for some other items. So you say, hey, maybe I can take a few extra bags. Why can you take a few extra bags? They're giving you bags for the items you're purchasing there. So you say, well, technically, I could bag each kernel of sugar in its own bag. No, I guess not. Okay, but let's say I bought a six-pack of Coke. So I could bag each bottle in its own bag. No, you can't. But maybe I could. Okay, but let's say I bought four items. So I could put each in their own bag. Maybe. But there's a certain norm that's accepted by the store. So we find excuses, but maybe we should verify if the halacha is on our side. Maybe we should be as concerned about taking something that's not legitimate in ours as we are about not eating something that's not kosher. So people think, if I have free Wi-Fi, what's wrong? Wait a second. That's if it's free. But what happens if it's the neighbor's Wi-Fi? And when I use his Wi-Fi, he has a lower speed. I want to use it. I should at least verify if the halacha is on my side. These are things which we sometimes don't think about. He says, yeah, but that's if you learn the halachot, that will help a person develop that feeling, hey, this is important. Yes?
Doesn't it say, like, if you have a fruit tree, its branches lean over into your neighbor's yard, that he can take from the fruit and eat it?
There is a halacha in that vein. Did you learn the details of that halacha? That sounds like Wi-Fi to you. I'm not sure. Because we can break that down to a lot of things. when you pick the fruits that are outside in public domain, you're not hurting the fruits that are growing by him. When you use the Wi-Fi in public domain, you're taking away from his Wi-Fi. He could have prevented fruits from growing into public domain. He can't prevent his Wi-Fi from public domain. You'll say he could learn how to put a password, and I'll say most people don't even know. Or at least 30, 40% of the people don't know. If they'd realize how their computer could be compromised by their Wi-Fi being public, believe me, they wouldn't put it there. If they thought for a second that half of Machon Meir is sitting on their Wi-Fi, and now their speed is down to who knows what, and if they're trying to download or upload pictures or have a Skype conversation, it's going to come out choppy, and they can't figure out why because they don't know enough about computers, I don't think they'd agree to it. And the examples keep going, saying there are many examples in this vein. But again, I'm not saying the halacha is one way or another, even though I think on Wi-Fi it is prohibited, but you don't have to ask me. And it might depend. Here in Machon Meir, you have four houses that have public Wi-Fi nearby. That's a big problem. But if you're going down a street and you have 50 Wi-Fis, and it's very common that everyone's using everyone's Wi-Fi, that might be different. I'm saying there are places where there's so much Wi-Fi, you know, you have an apartment building and everyone's letting everyone use it. Like basically there's so much, it's a given that everyone's using it. That might be different. It might be different in different parts of the country here as well. There are cities where there's public Wi-Fi for free. Now Eged is giving you Wi-Fi on the bus, on many buses for free. So there it might be different.
Why is it so important to have Wi-Fi?
I'm not saying it's important. I brought it as an example of something which we don't give too much weight to. People use it and they don't think that maybe I'm not allowed to use it. Maybe it's someone else's. Another simple example. There's a pen lying on the table and you use it. Here in a Machon Meir, that can be lethal. How so? We have halacha that one Jew ordinarily will not sue another Jew over a minuscule amount. If it's 2 agurot, usually you won't sue someone for it. But that doesn't mean I'm allowed to take it. But if I took it, then I can assume I'm still not a thief. But we have here people who are in the gear process, they're not yet Jewish, who said you're allowed to take from them. Do you know whose pen that was on the table? Who said you're allowed to? First of all, who said you're allowed to take it from another Jew either? If you'd ask me, I'd say, don't touch my pen. So you'll say, you really care about that little bit of ink I used to sign my name? And I'll say, yes. Why? Not because of the ink. Because how many times did you use a pen, put it in your pocket, and then find it there and say, gee, how'd that get there? Or if you put it down on the other table. So I'm very concerned. I wouldn't want anyone to use my pen. Leave my pen alone. I wouldn't let a person use my pen without permission for that reason. Because I'm concerned where it'll end up. I had a cup like this. Why does my cup have a label? Because people assumed they could use it, and then it disappeared. Now, this isn't the standard cup in Machon Meir. I'd expect I could find it. It's been a year or two, I haven't found it. So I label my cup. But I'm saying my point is not the halacha. My point is the sensitivity to think, maybe I'm not allowed to do this. I have a friend that whenever we visit them for Shabbos, they used to go to a shul that was a 15-minute walk from their house. They could gain 2 minutes by walking through an apartment building across the street. They save the trip around, they walk through the steps. So I never walked through the steps. And they'd always say, why don't you? It's public steps. And I always said, it's public steps for the people of that building or their visitors. They don't want people from all around walking through their building. They lose privacy. They get littering. They have to clean when you walk in with the dirt on your feet. And there's a certain loss if your steps become public domain. Then you have no privacy even in a more broad sense on your staircase. It becomes the street. So they'd always say, you're wrong, and walk through there. And I'd always say, don't wait for me for Kiddush, but I'm going around. I would do it quickly so we'd get home at the same time, but I never went through the building. After about 2 or 3 years, I started using a money changer in that building. So then I would walk through when I went to the money changer, and suddenly I noticed there was a big sign there. Please do not come through our building. At some point, they got fed up and they put up a sign. But before they put up the sign, was it right or wrong? I think it was wrong.
Is there a problem if we actually use something made by a boy and we utilize it to get hanav, to get benefit from it? Whether we know, I mean, the barrels, obviously, of wine, you can't drink from those barrels. We can't open a bottle of wine. Even if it's a Jew that opens a bottle of wine and pours a bottle of wine for you or a drink of wine for you, we cannot drink that. Is this the same situation?
Our point here is developing a sensitivity.
Nobody else want pizza?
So we're continuing with the Chazon Ish, Emunah u'Bitachon. ואף בלימודו במוצאו ושטחיות לא קנה עדנה את קניין המבוקש לאהבת הדין להיות מסור אליו. And learning things in a superficial way will not acquire, will not help a person acquire the love of the law or being dedicated to it. You want to acquire that connection to a law, you have to learn it in detail, you have to work on it, you have to understand it. I had an interesting thing on my ride in today. There's halacha I learned a few times, the halacha of blowing shofar 6 times on Friday afternoon. There's a Gemara in Tractate Shabbos, the 2nd chapter, that Friday afternoon, wherever we had our own domain here in Israel or in Babylon, so we would have someone who would blow the shofar 6 different blasts. Each one had a different code, telling you to stop working, telling you to start to pull your things off the fire, telling you to get your final cooking done for Shabbos, telling you Shabbos was in. So this is halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and the halacha actually is a short siman in Shulchan Aruch. It's a one halacha, and it's a paragraph that long. The custom one, we had our own domain, seems very simple. When you start working on it in depth, you start seeing there's a whole lot to discuss there. There's Maimonides' opinion that on Motzei Shabbos you have another blast. There's a lot. There's a lot of details to that seemingly simple halacha, which when you start looking into it, you see, wow, okay. So all the times I learned it, I ran through it, took 3 minutes and read it. This time the whole bus ride in, I was reading all different commentaries on that halacha, and suddenly I saw, wow, okay, there's more to be discussed here. You learn halacha in depth, you start connecting to the halacha. והלימוד ביון בהלכה ברדת להלכה ברורה בכל הסעיפים המסתפים. Learning halacha in depth, learning the halacha with clarity, with all the different applications of that halacha, הוא לימוד של שנים רבות, that takes many years. בשקידה נמרצה, it takes a lot of dedication and continuum. כי הסתגלות העיון הזה הוא תכלית ידיעת התורה. Because what's unique about this type of learning is that that's the essence of knowing Torah. To learn Torah, you guys are starting, that's great. But you want to learn Torah, it's learning Torah to the point where you know what the Torah wants of you at the different junctures of life. Our sages said, there's no way to acquire that on the fly. It requires focus, it requires time. If you're not going to work hard, you can't get that. Our sages say there are 48 tools to acquire Torah. And all those 48 tools are tools which require a person changing his habits. There are tools which are counterintuitive. We have our nature, our self-centered nature, and then we have the nature we have to acquire, the genteel the Torah wants to develop in a person, which are also precursors for acquiring Torah. Ve'ergele yishiyut, their habits that a person has to form, li'kanes b'darkei shlemut, they allow a person to enter wholeness. Ad shelo tafreyu tiv'o, until his nature doesn't get in his way, yitrav mesiruto v'otzem shkidato, when he works real hard, lo yiten shinad enav tnuma la'af apav, nor does he allow himself to rest, to just enjoy tranquil sleep when it's unnecessary. And the Chazon Ish lived by what he's saying. There's a famous story about now a student once walked in and saw the Chazon Ish had fallen asleep with the pillow off the cot. So when the Chazon Ish awoke later, the student asked him, "Why didn't you pick up the pillow and sleep on the pillow?" And he said, "If I had strength to pick up that pillow, I would have learned till I didn't have strength to pick up that pillow and then gone to sleep." He went to sleep when he didn't have strength to pick up the pillow. That's when the Chazon Ish went to sleep. Okay, so that's the level of dedication of the Chazon Ish. If we try to do that, we might flip out. Again, he built towards it over years, but that's what Chazon Ish is saying. You want to learn, okay, that's how you learn. You want to acquire a perfected soul, so that's through Torah. You want to have a sensitivity to laws of damages, so through learning those laws and working on those laws, you develop that sensitivity.